Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art. With your hosts, Leslie M. Scott Jones and David Von Strong. And now, here on your airwaves, on your dareways, on your ready to lay it bare waves. Not even doing anything to try to give David a little bit more time. To finish the thing that he's working on. No stalling, only darlings. How we doing? And here's David. Hello, Charlottesville. It is Sunday.
It is. Don't tell me to rotate my device. It is 10 o'clock.
This is Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I am David Von Strong, a.k.a. the Devious One, a.k.a. Negro Suave, a.k.a. Nefarious Rocker, a.k.a. Black Frodo. Little guy, hairy feet, trying to get through the darkness. Can't you see how the coffee's already affecting me?
It is. I see that. But, you know, it's okay. We will adjust.
With me, as always, is the lovely, the loquacious, the lascivious Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Good morning, David.
We're just going to get into it.
Okay.
We're just going to get into it. I'm just saying.
He's just going to get into it.
I had a Quattro de Mayo party that actually you were invited to and you did not attend.
Yeah, you know why?
Which one of the hosts was
there?
Yeah. Just save that.
No,
I get it. Yeah, you just been through a big move. You just moved from one place to another and moving is hard. And I think that was like your one actual full on chill day where you could just be and get it all out. So.
Actually, I spent the entire day working on my computer, literally the entire day, from 9:30 in the morning until around 7:30, and then our friend Shell came over. She was like, "Is it 1 o'clock?" I was like, "Yes."
Oh, see, you got wrapped up in Hurricane Rochelle.
Yes.
See, that's what happened to
Drunk
you.
Drunk cousin came over, and that was
see,
it.
See, yeah,
was it.
But that's a different thing. And Rochelle has been a former guest. We all know about the incomparable Rochelle Clayborn, but
yes.
We're not. But And I could go on about a discussion about Cinco de Mayo and the Americanization of it. I was just using an excuse to drink, blah blah blah. But I'm not going to go there. We're going to stay happy. We're not going to be controversial today. Not as controversial as we are in past times. We're going to keep it simple, stupid. We're gonna just relax a little bit. Just sit outside, watch the window in this hazy, rainy weather. Talk about a little bit of poetry.
It's a perfect day to talk about poetry.
Perfect day for poetry. It's got that nice, chill atmosphere to it. How do you guys feel about weather and poetry? What's the best weather to write a poem in? Ron, go.
I actually prefer 70 degrees and sunny.
Oh, so you're a fair weather Johnson?
Yes,
type of poet.
Yes.
Oh my!
I'm going with it. Clay, what do you think? Best weather for poetry? Go.
Anytime is poetry time.
I like that.
That's good.
With us is Clay Moldenhauer and Ronald Berube.
Barabee.
I am so sorry, sir.
That's all right. You're forgiven.
It's the African in me. It's the African in me. I just saw Berube. And that's just what I wanted to do. I apologize. Barabee. Ronald is the winner. Clay is the runner-up of the Jefferson Madison Regional Library / Writer House Poetry Contest. Guys, first of all, I just want you to, stay cool. No fisticuffs. It was an even contest, fair and square. There's not going to be a recount. Let's just agree to disagree and be civilized, okay?
Well, if we must.
Ron won, and he's still salty. I've never seen anything like it. This is the most hardcore poetry meeting. No, we like to have fun here on Homegrown, so that's why we're doing this. No.
David likes to be silly.
I do like to be silly.
So maybe we should give Clay a chance to read his poem.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what I was getting into. So we're going to go with the first runner-up poem. We're going to go with Clay's poem. The title is Make Fire. And we'd like Clay to read it right now.
Well, my poem, Make Fire, was written specifically for James Ryan's arrival to the UVA presidency. And I sent this to him around that date of August 2018. So in Make Fire, I'm charging him, I'm really challenging him, to bring the same cosmic fire that Thomas Jefferson brought in 1819. Maybe 2019 is the year it begins again. 200 years later, on the nose. Mm. So here's Make Fire. You should be hearing pages rattle and so forth. Make fire at water's edge, bare feet in mud, arms outstretched to empty sky. Stand griefless, silent. Wonder about nothing already known. Ponder on nothing already a puzzle. Orient to nothing given meaning by humans. Bless whatever comes. Give thanks. They too will be gods one day. Snake, turtle, crow, my friends, offer power and pain for companionship. But it's up to you to make fire, like the first time.
Nice.
All right.
Thank you.
So there's a lot of, I love that there's a kind of Native American kind of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Cadence
and feel to it, right? I love that. Especially since you're talking about specifically about Virginia, this part of Virginia that we know was first inhabited by the Monacan tribe. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm. And who before them? And who before them?
Yeah.
And who before them?
Right.
There's a Native woman who wrote a book called. Actually, she is the latest transmission of the book through her peoples, mm-hmm. of the title, Other Council Fires, mm-hmm. Were Here Before.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're picking up on what the judges picked up on, which I won't mention right now.
Can you talk about that first image, making fire on the water's edge?
Yes.
Because one of the things that's so striking about your poem is it's so sparse, it's so spare that that's such a strong thematic justification, at least imagistic justification. It can go past you so quickly because it's just right there, making fire on the water's edge, feet in mud, but over an empty sky. You've got a lot that's packed into that first moment. Can you unpack that for us?
Yes. I'm hoping that my readers will start with this poem and go looking for a similar pattern, because this pattern has become, in some ways, my life's work, though work is never finished. But that pattern, I used to teach this in the poetry classes that I taught in earlier years. And we'll, again, if you just pull out the nouns and you stack the nouns, you'll end up with the favorite framework or the favorite template of many indigenous people and moderns as well. So what's the first noun in the first line?
Fire.
And what's the last word? Well, see, my version, it's printed out and formatted the way I want the reader to read it.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's not printed. There's no instructions as how you should print a poem that's already published.
Mm-hmm.
But that's to help toward intonation, which you don't get from visual. but you do get through auditory. So the poet or anyone who writes a sentence is sort of working with both what is in their head visually and what's in their ears auditorily. And it's normally the native peoples who make most use of the auditory, and it's civilized folks. We call it civilized folks because they live in permanent buildings and pay rent. They're more visual.
So for you, the poetic experience is this. Is it fair to say that for you, the poetic experience is this melding of the auditory experience and also the literary experience, seeing it written, reading it?
You've got the play, and the play never stops. You can always read the play with a different the play going on in the poem. You can stress as to who your audience might be. For instance, if I want them to pick up on the five elements that opens the first five lines of the way my version is, you've got fire, you've got water, you've got sky as earth, and you've got sky as air, and then you've got mud as earth. So at water's edge also carries a lot of weight, because water's edge is where all the elements meet. You've got the air, you've got the earth, you've got the water, and you've got the sun. And in fact, that's where civilization actually starts. It's actually where humanity as a species start. If I remember some of the biology, that something crawled up out of the water and decided to stay. We crawled down out of the stars and decided to stay. And now we're looking for another home, Planet B? Really? Who's looking for Planet B? Most of us are just looking for Planet A to get a little piece of it that's ours. So I can start this poem talking about nature, and I can start this poem talking about civilization. And for me, every poem is a curriculum. That's what my poems have been, and I've been the primary student of them. I'll wake up in the morning and feel like I'm in a classroom with all these other souls, and we're all taking notes. And so most of my poems are simply notes of what I'm thinking about when I wake up in the morning.
And I also love the imagery in that first stanza, to make fire at water's edge, because when most people, like, go camping or whatever, they don't choose water's edge to make, like, that's a hard thing to do. So you're starting out with something that is counterintuitive and a challenge.
I enjoyed hearing the intro of this poem at the meeting we had on the church steps. Yes, I would say it's church steps. It's a library steps, but in some ways, libraries are churches.
Yes.
It's where we're going to bow down, sit down, and talk up the things that are stored in the libraries for us. And in fact, some of the greatest stories that have come up through humankind were written in mud tablets, as I remember. And there's still a great debate going on as to what is really referenced in those clay tablets. And I'm just picking up on my name applied to this. So I was picking up from the judge's comments about the poem being almost a direction, a ritual. Like the voice in the poem being a priest giving directions to a someone willing to learn how you call down the powers to make things happen that normally don't in the busyness of life. And here are the directions. So once you find your locale, your location, to bring down that cosmic power that I hope Jim Ryan is going to continue, especially with the rise in pay rates for employees in that institution, that he will find that spot, make fire, stretch his arms out to the universe, stand griefless and Well, I'm not sure what I mean by griefless. I just know that when I'm upset about something, I'm rarely very clear about the something.
Mm. Yeah. People rarely are when they're really angry and outraged about something.
Yeah. Yes.
And but
go ahead. No.
I was actually about to say to Jim Ryan, bow, shots fired from Clay Moldenhauer. He's pissed. Coming at you with that poetry, that fire. He's the Eminem of Charlottesville poetry, Clay Moldenhauer. And we will be right back with Ronald Barraby. We have to take a commercial. We got to pay some bills. Well, we're going to be back with Clay. We're going to wrap it up with Clay, and then we're going to move on to Ronald.
See you then.
I'm sure he's itching to show off that gold, baby. Show off that poetry gold. All right. We're just having fun. This is Homegrown. Cheer up!
I am local poet Mariana Dunn, and you're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art. 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
A lot. 19 minutes past the hour.
Yes!
You're just tuning in.
You missed it.
You're listening to Homegrown. We're having a better show during a commercial than we are. 94.7 WPVC. Yeah, PVC. That's what we're doing. Talking about Nilla Wavers.
And beer.
And beer. Like poets do.
Right.
All the time.
Of course.
So Clinton, executive producer, Homegrown, helping me through this. So are we going to do Clay's poem one more time and then go to Ronald, or are we going to do it again at the end of
yes,
the show?
Yes, we'll...
I'm giving away the magic. I apologize.
We will continue talking to Clay, and then we will do Clay's poem one time, and then we'll go down our list of things that are coming up.
Okay.
And then we'll switch to Ronald.
Okay. Super
wow.
duper. So now that we're caught up, because we all started the show a little bit late.
This is what happens when David doesn't have coffee in the morning.
Yes.
Not all of us started the show a little bit late.
Yeah, you were outside the same time I was.
He's not usually this sedate.
No, he's not.
Clay Moldenhauer.
I'm trying to catch the fire from my own poem, but I'm I could have had that same cup of coffee that we all missed.
Yeah.
So I realize that my time, my 15 seconds of fame in Charlottesville is about to dribble down. So there's a lot more going on in the poem. And like I say, the poems that I do write, they're usually dictations I'm taking down from my muses. And then I spend months, years working out the wording. And there are some poems that are still not finished.
Yeah. Can I ask a question about the wording?
Yes.
It's, again,
right.
It's so spare, but it feels so very, very careful. And one thing that I find interesting, and maybe so, I want to know if this is just me, but one thing that I find interesting is there seems to be some ambiguity going from, I guess, one phrase to another. I'm thinking specifically once you get here, bless whatever comes. Give thanks, they too will be gods. One day, snake, turtle, crow, my friends offer power and pain for companionship. Now, reading it, I can see that the sentence is, my friends offer power, pain, power. My friends offer power and pain for companionship. But hearing it, if you don't, because you can't see the punctuation, it's easy to hear it as they too will be gods one day, snake, turtle, crow, my friends, as if that my friends is part of the previous statement. It seems like there are a couple of places where as you move through it, there's this ambiguity in terms of have we left the last statement and gone into the first statement. I'm wondering if that's conscious, if there's a thematic significance for that.
Your question draws out some meaning that I had not really put on the paper consciously. And
so this is just all in my head.
No, this is not.
Clinton is a Star Wars fan.
I'm seeing that the ambiguity can lead the reader or the listener into meanings that may not have been in the conscious mind of the writer, and that's the issue in some ways.
You think that's valid? Is that
I think
valid
that's thing? Valid. That's the way you read it, but it depends on whether you're reading it serially or you're reading it radiation. For instance, if you say that the gods coming are the snake, turtle, and crow, mm-hmm. there are people who have written books about how every species is evolving.
Yes.
Humans are not just on a golden pedestal mm-hmm. evolving, except that we are de-evolving the other species the way we live our lives.
Right.
That's what ecology is about, pointing out that who's bearing the cost of civilization.
Right.
What we call our way of life.
Mm-hmm.
Our way of life right now is being deemed somewhat predatory.
Yes.
To the other species.
Yes.
And others of us who walk on two legs. That is also
yep.
on the conversation list.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
looking back to your insight, we are giving thanks for whatever comes.
Mm-hmm.
Love that line.
Whatever comes.
Love that line.
When you're standing griefless in the face of life's challenges
mm-hmm.
and inviting life to meet you, and it does at least halfway,
mm-hmm.
but with the proper words and attitudes and a open hands, open hearts, something might come out of the shadows where we left and are on our way back mm-hmm. to meet them.
Well, it's the law of attraction,
yes.
right? Whatever we put into the universe comes back to us.
Yes.
At the end of the day, what I hear in this poem is like acceptance of chaos and the destruction that we ourselves have caused. And maybe I'm just looking too deeply in it. I'm just interpreting for myself, but I think that's also what you've done so beautifully, is you've constructed it and crafted it so meticulously and yet left freedom for interpretation.
Yes.
And yeah, exactly. And what I hear is almost like a requiem, like that give thanks line. It's like, it's almost like watching the mushroom cloud like ripple over you, you know? It's like, let's, you know, bring it on.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what you're saying as well. But
and it's also making
and in that chaos, know that also I will have purpose and I will act
yeah.
in whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I also hear is determination in the face of chaos. Am I right or wrong in that?
So thank you for dragging me through my own work to help me be receptive to implications that were not there originally. Mm. I think the death of a poem is when it falls into the camp of the originalists
mm-hmm.
and it can only mean what was said on the paper.
Yeah.
I think that is an issue moving around in our intellectual circles.
Mm-hmm.
So constitutionally, do you take one position or another, or is it possible that every document is words from the future for us to live up to?
Mm.
Mm. Oh, but the surety of originalism is so seductive.
Isn't it? It's such a tight little box that you can't even turn your cheeks in.
Don't make me think and shift.
Can I ask a segue? And I'm going to open this up for Ronald, too. I do want to segue into the announcements after I do.
The gold deserves attention.
You should read his poem one more time.
Okay. Well, all right. Yes, you should. Go.
All right. Here we go again.
Make fire.
Make fire at water's edge, bare feet in mud, arms outstretched to empty sky. Stand griefless, silent. Wonder about nothing already known. Ponder on nothing already a puzzle. Orient to nothing given meaning by humans. Bless whatever comes. Give thanks. They too will be gods one day. Snake, turtle, crow, my friends, offer power and pain for companionship. But it's up to you to make fire like the first time.
You read it differently, too.
Mm. Yeah, you did.
Look at that. Fire! but here's... And that takes so much different interpretation into the poem, too. But I also want to ask Ron and you, Clay, a question. So when you... Being such astute... careful poets, and I've read Ron's poem before I came in, but just being the careful poets that you are, do you ever sit in a room with pretentious poets, maybe, and then just hear like a trash poem, like no structure, no frequency, like it just translates on nothing, and they're just so pretentious and so proud of themselves. And do you ever just call anybody out on their BS? Like, I can't understand any of that, because yeah, that's my question. Do you ever call people out on BS poems?
No, and it would just I can't see myself being that ungracious, you know, and I can't not put myself in that person's shoes and think I'm doing that myself one of these every now and then, you know, so. And it's hard to know. It's hard to really appreciate a poem listening to it, especially for the first time if you haven't read it. That's why I'm glad we're reading these twice.
But, yeah.
And there's such a big difference between hearing them and reading them. So if I'm just sitting there listening for the first time and not getting a poem, I'm not going to dismiss it on that basis alone.
Right.
Now, as for the poet himself making an ass of himself while he's playing.
Now we're getting not somewhere.
Present company accepted. but yeah, that can be intolerable. But
right on. Nah, just curious, Clay. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm in the spirit of live and let love.
Right on. God, just my man is so simple. And he's just like, all right, keep it moving. That's what I got to say.
Sweet.
You're so sweet, Clay. All right, can y'all hang tight for a second? We're gonna do some local announcements. Fellow artists like yourself, and we'll be right back. Okay.
Good.
All right. Cool. All right. Yeah. I'm gonna turn this one. All right. Here are just some of the artistic events happening this week, currently running. Check out these exhibits from these local artists. Nina Thompson and Tracy Landon display their paintings at New Dominion Bookshop. Lou Haney at New City Arts Welcome Gallery. Various artists showing encaustic works at Melting Point Contemporary Encaustic Works in the Sarah B. Smith Gallery of the McGuffey Arts Center.
I am so proud of you for saying encaustic correctly.
Encaustic.
Without coughing, yes. I think, yes.
Kelly Oakes displaying her careful figure work in still at McGuffey. Local high schools exhibit at McGuffey. And Michael Fitz and Megan Reed have Objectify. I was peeking through the window. It's amazing. The work they do is really amazing. Their joint exhibit of their photorealistic style of painting at Second Street Gallery until May 17th. Carrie Olivia shows dreamlike imagery created by manipulating photographs in Mayflowers at Top Knot Studio. That's all the things that are happening right now at various exhibits, so check it out while it still lasts. Currently mudding. I was on a roll. Currently running
so well.
Through May 11th, DMR Adventures Teens Conservatory presents Les Miserables, a school edition. School edition. Wow, that's gonna take out a lot of stuff at the Belmont's Art Collaborative. Like 2 hours of that play is just gone. Completely gone. Currently running through May 12th, Guerrilla Theater Productions presents a stripped down version of The Glass Menagerie, which I am hearing really good things about. So I might just grab myself a ticket. Last Chance, Albemarle High School Spring Musical, Cinderella by Rodgers and Hammerstein. Oh my God, this is gonna be so hard. May 10th, Ragged Branch Distillery presents Poets and Bourbon, where, from 4:30 to 7:30, poets Sarah Robinson, James Cole, and Patsy Asuncion,
former guest,
read their work. Read from their work.
Paired with bourbon. That sounds like a good night.
Oh,
I'm
man.
Just saying.
Depends on the bourbon.
Can't get better than that. Oh, so much stuff on May 10th. Sonia Jorg reads from her novel True Places at New Dominion Bookshop. And May 10th through May 26th, God of Carnage, the funny and brutal Tony Award-winning play in the cellar at Four County Players. Actually, that production is the one that won the Tony just now. It just happened. May the 11th, catch art, music, dance, song, and storytelling at the 16th Annual Charlottesville Festival of Cultures at Washington Park. Oh, May 11th is jam-packed. The Albemarle Ballet Theater presents their Spring Dance Gala with excerpts from Etudes by Harold Lander and Carl Cherney. Disconnected, a student developed a choreographed piece. Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. We all do these things. As well as full performance of The Ugly Duckling, all at the V.O. Dickinson Building. Such a great venue at Piedmont Virginia Community College. And again on May the 11th, Stanton author and former guest Clifford Garstang reads from his work along with New Mexico poet Lauren Camp at New Dominion Bookshop. Yo. We need to be getting sponsorships from New Dominion Bookshop and New City Arts. I got to talk to my people. And for your music options this week.
Yo, people.
I got people.
You got people?
I got some peoples.
Okay.
You got peoples.
All right. Well, today, Michael Clem and Rusty Spidell at Glasshouse Winery at 3 o'clock. Campbell Road playing Southern Rock at Dirty Nelly's. Sarah White and the New Band open for Nashville's Sarah Shock and the Disarmers at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. On the 7th, Lewis Smith and Friends at Fellini's. On the 8th, Ben Hernandez and Gabe Roby at the Whiskey Jar. Junior's Last Stand at Dirty Nelly's. Matthew O'Donnell at the Shebeen. Tanya Ray and the Sound Machine at Rapture. On the 9th, Chamomile and Whiskey's Coda Curl? Coda Curl plays a solo set at Dirty Nelly's.
I love that band name, Chamomile and Whiskey.
Right?
That just makes you want to go see
it. It really does.
I'm just saying.
And then...
Except you gave up names.
So they're at Dirty Nelly's, and then Coda and Friends play a set at the Whiskey Jar. On the 10th, Trees on Fire play Fridays after 5 at Sprint Pavilion. Will Overman plays Proenata Farm Brewery. And an evening with Eli Cook at Wayland's Crossing Tavern. Hey, Eli, you need to come back on the show, dude. Indecision at the Jefferson Theater. Lowland Hum album release show for their new record. Former guest. Glyphonic, which is an awesome album name at the Southern Cafe and Music
Hall. Isn't that the stuff that you get sued for catching mesothelioma or whatever?
No, babe.
Okay.
No. Okay. Wow. May 11th, Seaville Jazz Congregation at Albemarle Cider Works, Gladstone's at Dirty Nelly's, Anlar at Tin Whistle Irish Pub, David Tewksbury at Grace Estate Winery. David, you need to come back on the show, sweetie. The Judy Chops at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. Every Sunday, Travis Elliott at Rapture. Every Monday, Bluegrass Jam at Front Porch Roots Music School. Seafoot! Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music. Weekly Open Jam at Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Say that five times fast. Tango Music with Miles Pierce and Betty Metcalf at the Bebedero. Red and the Romantics at the Whiskey Jar. Onyx Manor at Rapture. Songwriter Night at the Local. Every Tuesday, Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebedero. The Ragged Mountain String Band at the Whiskey Jar. Traditional Session at the
Tin Whistle Irish Pub.
Every Wednesday, the Mike Krasinski and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Every Wednesday and Thursday, Josh Mayo's Open Mic Night at 1221 Market Street. And Bachata Fusion at the Rabbit Hole. Every Thursday, Humberto Sales and Vincent Zorn do Gypsy Rumba at the Bebedero. And every Thursday...
Oh, snap. John Durth
at Miller's. All right.
That is just some, but not all of the artistic events that are going down in the new and burgeoning Charlottesville. So check them out. Go see your peeps. Support your local artists like Blaine Boldenhauer and Ron Paraby. They'll be back on Homegrown right now. Drop!
Hey, this is Keith Morris. Keith Morris and the Crooked Numbers. And you're listening to 94.7 Homegrown Radio.
36 minutes past the hour. 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Stay tuned after the show for more great local programming like this, but not great as this.
Like this.
I mean, come on.
But
Black,
yes.
Blackest Sunday show on 94.7. Let's be real here. and we're loving it. And my blackness always wants me to say Berube, but it's not Berube, it's Berube. Ronald Berube is in the house. He won the joint Writer House Poetry Contest champion. Where's the belt?
It's holding my pants up.
Oh, right. That's right. He's not going to flash it because Clay is here. That would be disrespectful. And then Clay would get the swinging, and then we'd just be back to what it was before the show started.
You've got this whole combat vibe with you today.
I'm saying I want to see poets like fight it out. You know how that would go viral? Like, I'm just trying to make
really,
money.
David?
I'm just playing. You guys are really awesome.
Increase the peace, David. Increase the peace.
You're right, though. All this poet on poet violence has to stop. I'm just instigating, and I apologize.
He's being a good friend.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Ronald.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
So we're just gonna get. Go ahead.
I have to interject a story. You just reminded me by mispronouncing my name the way you did.
reminds me of the day I was being issued my Army uniform, and I was in line behind and in front of all these other guys going up to a counter giving our names, giving my name to the black PFC who's, you know, distributing clothes. Mm-hmm. I said, he called my name first. He's got a card with my name, and he goes, Barubi, Barubi. Mm-hmm. He looks at me, he goes, that's an African name.
Damn right it is. But you wear it so beautifully.
Yeah, thank you.
I was super confused when I walked in the room. I will be honest. I was like, okay, all right, let's go. You know, prejudice comes in many forms, I will admit. All right, so we're going to get into it. A differential calculus of my feelings is your winning poem of the year. So if you would be as kind to read it for us the first time, and we're going to break it down.
All right. Grown. A differential calculus of my feelings. Listening in the ambulance to the insistent siren, trying like the rabbit dying in an eagle's claws just to enjoy the ride, amusing myself by guessing where the hell we are from my compromised position of all that's flashing past, the roof of our house needs replacing. Traffic's backed up as usual on the bypass. There's your office building. Where's your car? Clouds are massing, gray behind the mountains west. You've been hurting more than you've been saying. I can tell, afraid to scare me by complaining, just as I am you. More often lately when you think, I answer. When I sigh, you wake. I thought once at our age we'd have seen the best of what was promised. Never guessed how much distance we could cover simply by moving closer to each other. Sometimes, says the eagle, I'm surprised myself.
Awesome. So can I...
Wow.
So great poem. So can I again ask about this first image?
In the ambulance?
Well, actually, the second image. Like
the rabbit.
Trying like the rabbit dying in an eagle's claws just to enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
it's such a wonderful shock, and it's something that I think that the judge, by the way, these were judged by the current poet laureate of Virginia, Henry Hart, but it's something that he mentioned, which was the surprising it is at once a horrific image, like the rabbit dying in the eagle's claws, and at the same time, there's this really quick flip of humor in it, which just shocks. Can you talk about that? Did you start with that image? Did that come to you later? What?
No, I didn't start with it. I started with the experience of being in an ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, and trying to stay calm. I don't really know where the eagle and rabbit came from, but I've actually tried writing another poem at times about an eagle circling over my house and looking for my dog or a mouse or a squirrel or something, and so that's where that image came in there as a...
What happened to you to have you in an ambulance?
I had a heart attack. A couple of times. I've had at least three ambulance rides that I've enjoyed. Yeah. So
he did it again.
That you've enjoyed.
Well,
that fourth one though.
Well, that last.
That fucker. Yeah, that guy Bill.
Yeah,
that guy Bill.
But I think it's exact. You know, people. Well, first of all, when they're putting you in the ambulance, everyone around you is, you know, fairly excited. Mm-hmm. and upset, except hopefully the EMTs shoving you in there.
Mm.
So the task seems to be to, you know, calm oneself down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you describe it with this, like, sort of, like, irreverent, like, whimsy. Like, I can hear, like, John Williams in the background. Like, it's a certain lightheartedness. And, with Clay's poem, I see, like, similarities in both of your poems. A, the animal imagery. And B, the fatalistic, like, acceptance. And just being like, okay, I'm in an ambulance, just hanging on, just going for the ride.
Yeah. Can I say that line again? Like, there's this play, this juxtaposition between a sort of I won't say lightness, but a casualness, but at the same time, some stuff that's not casual. From my compromised position of all that's flashing past. And I love how at one point it's like the world that's flashing past, and you go into these images that are flashing past. The roof of the house needs, and all of a sudden we're into the thoughts that are flashing past. I need to replace the roof of the house. Oh, there's your office. Where's your car at right now? But then there's also the idea of my life flashing past, which is not so casual, right?
Right.
I think my favorite image is at the very end.
Uh-huh.
The best of what was promised never guessed how much distance we could cover simply by moving closer to each other. I love that phrase, and it's such a simple message that I think a lot of people, because we get so busy and because we are so ingrained in what quote unquote have to do, that's the one thing we don't realize that we're going to miss.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the part of the poem that makes it and that gets people. And I don't know, I certainly didn't write this poem with that end in mind. I didn't know where this poem was going, as I often don't, you know. And I, as the writer's thoughts start becoming more personal, that's where my thoughts went. So,
can you dig into that? Can you dive into a little bit more the idea of you start a poem, you're writing a poem, and you don't know where it's going.
Right.
Because I do some writing, but mostly I'm doing playwriting.
Uh-huh.
And so frequently I'm thinking of the ending. I'm thinking of like how do I need to get to here?
Yeah.
The idea of writing and not knowing where this is going to go.
Right.
It freaks me out a little bit. I mean, I understand it's part of the process.
Yeah.
And, you know, there have been times when I've started writing something and, like, I thought, okay, this is the path I'm going to take. And then I look back at it, I'm like, no, that's not where this is going at all.
Right.
But, yeah.
It's, the when I start out with an idea in mind already of where this poem's going, they usually are a failure, those poems. I can't get there. It just changes altogether and becomes a different poem than what I thought I was writing. Certainly, I started out thinking about the ambulance ride, you know. What happens is the words change the poem as you're putting them down. You know, and you respond to you've written a phrase and you respond to that phrase and then to the next one, and the words take you where the poem wants to go. And in my case, at least, it's very often the sound of the words as well as their meaning, you know, that take me where I want to go.
Mm. I've done the exact same thing when writing like rap lyrics. I'll be like thinking about something at work and I'll like freestyle it and I'll be like, yeah, that sounds dope. And then I'll go to write it like back to where I was and I'll write the first line and it's like, oh,
yeah.
And then I'll come up with another line and then I'll just like snowball into this other thing. So it's like the same difference. It's like you can't recreate that same lightning in a bottle from what you had before. So you just gotta write.
And that's the fun of it.
Right.
Frankly, you know, because if if you always know how the poem's going to end, it's like writing an office memo, you know? And it becomes a little tiresome.
Hell yeah.
You know?
Hell yeah.
So.
I write very good office memos.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm very good at office memos.
Putting writes a nice, concise message that fills everything, all of the messaging that you need to hear.
So
work on my tone, yeah. Everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Very professional.
No, but I am very a lot like you. Like Clinton, I write plays and I also write fiction. But yeah, when I start something, I never know where it's going to go. Like I just start with a character and I just kind of start writing and see what happens to him.
Right. And when I've tried to write fiction in the past, I'm not able to do that. I'm not able to start with a character for some reason. It's just not in me to do that, which is why I think I never wrote very good fiction and finally stopped trying.
Write about me, damn it.
I usually start with a line and or a situation like this. And in this one, I started out with the idea of writing about being in the ambulance.
I was going to say that first line just hooks you right in.
And then I came up with the line that sounded good to me and that enables me to move forward from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And that as a reader kind of like just boom, just tags you in and then you have to continue the rest. And we are going to read that poem again, but we got to pay some bills. We're going to be right back. Ronald and Clay, Poets in the House. This is Homegrown. Drop!
This is Daniel and Lauren from Lowland Hum.
And you're listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
50 minutes past the hour, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This is Homegrown. Clinton has a question.
A question here with our guest, Clay Moldenhauer.
Y'all know what this
and
is.
Ronald Barraby. So, Ronald, the judge, when he was talking about your poem, pointed out that there are a couple lines of blank verse in it. I'm looking at here, the best of what was promised, never guessed. And I'm wondering how, I guess it's a question generally about structure. How much are you paying attention to that? I mean, how much do you really drill down to the structure of your poems, the structure of your lines?
A lot in the end. All right. Initially, that's a very secondary thought in the back of my mind, you know. And then as I'm going over it again and again considering that and considering the rhythm of each line, that becomes more an issue for me until I can finally read it over entirely to myself and like it.
And let me re-ask the question that that I asked for Clay. So for you, how much of what's the balance for you for poetry in terms of being an audio experience
right,
as opposed to a literary experience or a reading experience?
Yeah, it's a big question. It's a very tough balance to find sometimes. And you know, there are some poems I think that just no matter how much music I try to put in them, don't want to sing, but read really well on paper, and some it, you know, and then some that sing along pretty well somehow sometimes don't make entirely a lot of sense, but the ones that sing are I think are more successful poems, but you know.
Well, let's read it one more time.
Okay.
One more time. Sorry. Continue.
Listening in the ambulance to the insistent siren, trying like the rabbit dying in an eagle's claws, just to enjoy the ride, amusing myself by guessing where the hell we are, from my compromised position of all that's flashing past. The roof of our house needs replacing. Traffic's backed up as usual. On the bypass, there's your office building. Where's your car? Clouds are massing, gray behind the mountains west. You've been hurting more than you've been sane. I can tell, afraid to scare me by complaining, just as I am you. More often lately, when you think, I answer. When I sigh, you wake. I thought once at our age we'd have seen the best of what was promised, never guessed how much distance we could cover simply by moving closer to each other. Sometimes, says the eagle, I'm surprised myself.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. Yeah.
I love that.
Is it a pedestrian question for me to ask? Who or what is the eagle at the end?
Yeah. I was wondering if anyone was going to ask about that. you know, that last line just sort of came to me all of a sudden. I wrote it down. And I thought, well, for a long time, I didn't like that. I thought it just doesn't fit. I mean, the eagle isn't a character really in this poem. And I was asking myself, who or what is the eagle? And then over time, I came to decide, you know, that's fine. I don't know what the eagle is, but I like it being there. I decided, hell, it's my poem. I can leave it there if I want.
So that's what
it establishes whatever relationship is, it establishes that there is a relationship.
Yeah.
And I guess that's open to the reader what that relationship is.
Yeah.
You know, who's your eagle?
That's an interesting thought, by the way. I was thinking, listening to... Yeah. Clay, excuse me, that the poem, every poem is finished by the reader, you know, and every story is finished by the reader.
Yes.
Right on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got nothing after that. I mean, what else are you supposed
mic
to say?
Drop.
After that, yeah. We have such great guests that do great mic drops about subjects that they, I mean... You guys really focus and believe in what you do, and thank you for not just, you know, bringing in rhymes. You know, you. What are you doing?
You keep turning away from the mic.
Well, I have to turn my head. My neck hurts. Thank you guys for coming on to this show.
Thanks. Thanks again.
It's been really good.
Yeah.
Thanks to the Jefferson Madison Regional Library at Rider House for reaching out, plugging us in with you guys. This has been really great. Full of laughs. One for the ages.
Best
poetry show ever. Ever.
1 year later.
I'm not lying. Yeah, for real. The recap. Like SNL. All right, let's take it down now. Wake up, morning call. I mean, yeah, that's next. A lot of great programming coming up next. 94.7. We love y'all. I love you, Clinton. I love you, Leslie.
I love you too, David.
Thank you to Clay Moldenhauer and Ronald Barraby for being here. Hopefully they're going to be back sometime soon. Yeah, and that's all we got. I don't know if I'm going to be here next Sunday. It's going to be an incredibly busy day. So I might have to take a sabbatical. But who knows? I mean, I'm just saying. All right, much love. Love you, Leslie.
Love you too, David.
Love you, Clinton.
Yeah. Oh, and
you love me too.
From the other side of the room.
That grunt means that you love me. This is homegirl. Have a good day.
You've been listening to Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art. We'd like to thank our guests, Clay Moldenhauer and Ron Barraby. Our opening music is from Spit It Out, Inc. Our event music is by Positive Collective. Any complaints about Homegrown should be directed to our attorneys at the fine Lisping Law Firm of Tuchman, Overman, Mumphin & Burke. Legal services that wrap around you like a thong right now, or listening, of course, to Devin Sprawl. Remember to keep your dial on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We will see you next week. Unless David craps out on us. Don't. Tell David he can't leave. Tell David you can't live without him. All right. Bye.
Climb, climb, climb. Grown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.